Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel intermedio B2. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 1.
2 days ago, China staged one of its biggest incursions into the seas and skies around Taiwan, sending in dozens of military planes and several ships. It was the latest show of aggression towards the self-governing island, which communist China claims as its own. In response, the Taiwanese president, Tsai Ing-wen, has announced that military service there will increase from 4 months to 1 year. She said Taiwanese forces needed to be more agile, responsive, and harder to attack.
Extract 2.
In 1980, as its population reached 1 billion, China imposed a strict one-child policy. The birth rate declined, but that meant fewer young people to support an aging population. By 2016, that had become a problem, and the one-child policy was abandoned. However, the birth rate remains low, and now China's population has fallen for the first time since the famine of the 1960s. It is still the largest in the world at 1.4 billion, but the decline of 850,000 could mark the start of a long-term downward trend, with implications for China's economic growth and stability.
Extract 3.
The United States is to require arrivals from China to show a negative COVID test from the 5th of January. It's the latest country to tighten restrictions on Chinese visitors because of the explosion of infections that followed the dismantling of Beijing's zero COVID policy. Italy, India, Japan and Taiwan have taken similar measures. A European Union spokesperson said its commission had convened a meeting of EU health officials on Thursday to discuss a coordinated approach. Governments are concerned that a new COVID variant could develop.
Extract 4.
Even as countries around the world are introducing COVID tests for travellers from China, the Chinese government has rejected criticism that its official figures on coronavirus victims vastly underestimate the scale of the problem. Officially, only one death from COVID was recorded on Friday across the whole of China's population of 1.4 billion. Beijing says it's being honest, but a British medical forecasting firm thinks that 9,000 people could be dying of the disease every day in China.
Extract 5.
It's not just China which is hoping for COVID-19 rates to fall. The rest of the world needs this to help the global economy avoid a major downturn. There are some signs this is happening in China's biggest cities, but the decision by Beijing to lift lockdown restrictions continues to pose a risk, especially in the countryside. The authorities fear a wave of infections there, and so vital medical supplies are being dispatched to rural hospitals, including drugs and oxygen monitors. Later this month, millions of people will be moving between rural and urban areas during the Lunar New Year.
Extract 6.
China is getting tougher on countries it thinks are discriminating against its travellers following its surge in COVID cases. It's now stopped issuing short-term visas to individuals from South Korea and Japan. Chinese citizens have been allowed to travel more freely since the country's zero COVID policy was abandoned, and that's led to dozens of countries imposing testing and flight restrictions. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin called on countries to base their COVID-19 prevention measures on scientific facts.
Extract 7.
Well, the Chinese social media platform Weibo has banned or suspended more than 1,000 accounts, some with millions of followers, for what it described as personal attacks against Chinese coronavirus specialists and encouraging violence. Michael Duncan reports.
Weibo didn't specify which posts had prompted the action, but in a statement it said it wasn't acceptable to hurl insults at people who held a different point of view or to incite conflicts.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 1.
2 days ago, China staged one of its biggest incursions into the seas and skies around Taiwan, sending in dozens of military planes and several ships. It was the latest show of aggression towards the self-governing island, which Communist China claims as its own. In response, the Taiwanese president, Tsai Ing-wen, has announced that military service there will increase from 4 months to 1 year. She said Taiwanese forces needed to be more agile, responsive and harder to attack.
Extract 2.
In 1980, as its population reached 1 billion, China imposed a strict one-child policy. The birth rate declined, but that meant fewer young people to support an ageing population. By 2016, that had become a problem, and the one-child policy was abandoned. However, the birth rate remains low, and now China's population has fallen for the first time since the famine of the 1960s. It is still the largest in the world at 1.4 billion, but the decline of 850,000 could mark the start of a long-term downward trend, with implications for China's economic growth and stability.
Extract 3.
The United States is to require arrivals from China to show a negative COVID test from the 5th of January. It's the latest country to tighten restrictions on Chinese visitors because of the explosion of infections that followed the dismantling of Beijing's zero COVID policy. Italy, India, Japan and Taiwan have taken similar measures. A European Union spokesperson said its commission had convened a meeting of EU health officials on Thursday to discuss a coordinated approach. Governments are concerned that a new COVID variant could develop.
Extract 4.
Even as countries around the world are introducing COVID tests for travellers from China, the Chinese government has rejected criticism that its official figures on coronavirus victims vastly underestimate the scale of the problem. Officially, only one death from COVID was recorded on Friday across the whole of China's population of 1.4 billion. Beijing says it's being honest, but a British medical forecasting firm thinks that 9,000 people could be dying of the disease every day in China.
Extract 5.
It's not just China which is hoping for COVID-19 rates to fall. The rest of the world needs this to help the global economy avoid a major downturn. There are some signs this is happening in China's biggest cities, but the decision by Beijing to lift lockdown restrictions continues to pose a risk, especially in the countryside. The authorities fear a wave of infections there, and so vital medical supplies are being dispatched to rural hospitals, including drugs and oxygen monitors. Later this month, millions of people will be moving between rural and urban areas during the Lunar New Year.
Extract 6.
China is getting tougher on countries it thinks are discriminating against its travellers following its surge in COVID cases. It's now stopped issuing short-term visas to individuals from South Korea and Japan. Chinese citizens have been allowed to travel more freely since the country's zero COVID policy was abandoned, and that's led to dozens of countries imposing testing and flight restrictions. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman, Wang Wenbin, called on countries to base their COVID-19 prevention measures on scientific facts.
Extract 7.
The Chinese social media platform Weibo has banned or suspended more than 1,000 accounts, some with millions of followers, for what it described as personal attacks against Chinese coronavirus specialists and encouraging violence. Michael Duncan reports.
Weibo didn't specify which posts had prompted the action, but in a statement it said it wasn't acceptable to hurl insults at people who held a different point of view or to incite conflicts.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
In 1984, the world was introduced to the Apple Macintosh computer. And in the world of computing, the mid-80s were significant for another reason. It was the high watermark for women in America signing up to study computer science. But why? Steve Jobs was right. Technology showed us our future. But where did all the women go? In a photograph posted online recently, a group of prominent technology entrepreneurs smiled as they gathered at an event in Italy. In the picture, there were 15 men and 2 women. But it turned out that the women weren't just outnumbered. They weren't really there. They were added to the picture later by Photoshop. Sounds about right for the tech industry, someone tweeted. Computer science is a young field, and its beginnings are filled with the accomplishments of women. So why are they being driven away from a profession they helped create?
In the wartime, just after the war, women were called the computers. If you've seen Hidden Figures, a lot of women were involved in doing the calculations for the rockets and so on. Those women went on to be leaders in the computing industry.
And so did this woman, Dame Wendy Hall. She's the Regis Professor of Computer Science at Southampton University in the UK, and in 2006 was one of the founding directors of the Web Science Research Initiative, with, among others, Tim Berners-Lee, architect of the World Wide Web.
In the 70s and 80s, there were many women leading IT departments in industry. That wasn't uncommon at all. But what happened in the mid-80s was when the personal computers came out. In the UK, that's where I saw it first. Nobody understood why they would need a computer. There was no internet at the time, no web. Nobody had connections in their homes. So very few people bought computers for their homes. So in order to up sales, they were marketed as toys for the boys. They were marketed to fathers to show their sons how to do things on computers. And we have never escaped that culture. Computing, which was a completely new subject, we managed to successfully turn 50% of the population off of studying it when it was just beginning to emerge as a discipline in its own right. These were the very earliest days of computer science.
So what do we have to do in the West to get more women to enroll in computer science courses?
Well, if we knew, we'd have done it.
But that isn't to say that institutions around the world aren't trying. Here at Imperial College in London, they run a variety of programs to attract school-aged children, especially girls, to STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and maths. But even with the extra effort, for the last 3 years, women made up fewer than a quarter of the students on the computer science course.
Hi, I'm Carolina. I'm studying computing, second year.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm also my second year of computing.
Hi, I'm Ellie. I'm also my second year of computing.
Hi, I'm India. I'm second year studying joint maths and computer science.
To get this far, students have proven they have both the aptitude and the enthusiasm to succeed on such a demanding course. But does being in such a small cohort feel like one more challenge to face?
By the time you get to doing computing as a degree, you've pretty much lived through it at school. Like, I was the only girl in my computing class. It was the same in my physics class. It's a problem across pretty much all of STEM, but it's just more pronounced in computing because a lot of parents don't necessarily think to expose computing to their female children, and you've got to find a way to get yourself into it.
What do you think it will take to make people think women in computer science are? That's the modern woman who I'm thinking of.
It's worth noting that I've never coded a game, for example, and I think that's really the stereotype when you think of the computing students. I think it's mainly just about breaking stereotypes about who a computer scientist actually is.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
In 1984, the world was introduced to the Apple Macintosh computer. And in the world of computing, the mid-80s were significant for another reason. It was the high watermark for women in America signing up to study computer science. But why? Steve Jobs was right. Technology showed us our future. But where did all the women go? In a photograph posted online recently, a group of prominent technology entrepreneurs smiled as they gathered at an event in Italy. In the picture, there were 15 men and 2 women. But it turned out that the women weren't just outnumbered. They weren't really there. They were added to the picture later by Photoshop. Sounds about right for the tech industry, someone tweeted. Computer science is a young field, and its beginnings are filled with the accomplishments of women. So why are they being driven away from a profession they helped create?
In the wartime, just after the war, women were called the computers. If you've seen Hidden Figures, a lot of women were involved in doing the calculations for the rockets and so on. Those women went on to be leaders in the computing industry.
And so did this woman, Dame Wendy Hall. She's the Regis Professor of Computer Science at Southampton University in the UK, and in 2006 was one of the founding directors of the Web Science Research Initiative, with, among others, Tim Berners-Lee, architect of the World Wide Web.
In the 70s and 80s, there were many women leading IT departments in industry. That wasn't uncommon at all. But what happened in the mid-80s was when the personal computers came out. In the UK, that's where I saw it first. Nobody understood why they would need a computer. There was no internet at the time, no web. Nobody had connections in their homes. So very few people bought computers for their homes. So in order to up sales, they were marketed as toys for the boys. They were marketed to fathers to show their sons how to do things on computers. And we have never escaped that culture. Computing, which was a completely new subject, we managed to successfully turn 50% of the population off of studying it when it was just beginning to emerge as a discipline in its own right. These were the very earliest days of computer science.
So what do we have to do in the West to get more women to enroll in computer science courses?
Well, if we knew, we'd have done it.
But that isn't to say that institutions around the world aren't trying. Here at Imperial College in London, they run a variety of programs to attract school-aged children, especially girls, to STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and maths. But even with the extra effort, for the last 3 years, women made up fewer than a quarter of the students on the computer science course.
Hi, I'm Carolina. I'm studying computing, second year.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm also in my second year of computing.
Hi, I'm Ellie. I'm also my second year of computing.
Hi, I'm India. I'm a second year studying joint maths and computer science.
To get this far, students have proven they have both the aptitude and the enthusiasm to succeed on such a demanding course. But does being in such a small cohort feel like one more challenge to face?
By the time you get to doing computing as a degree, you've pretty much lived through it at school. Like, I was the only girl in my computing class. It was the same in my physics class. It's a problem across pretty much all of STEM, but it's just more pronounced in computing because a lot of parents don't necessarily think to expose computing to their female children, and you've got to find a way to get yourself into it.
What do you think it will take to make people think women in computer science are? That's the modern woman who I'm thinking of.
It's worth noting that I've never coded a game, for example, and I think that's really the stereotype when you think of the computing students. I think it's mainly just about breaking stereotypes about who a computer scientist actually is.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
It's easy to tell when someone's not paying attention. But it can be surprisingly tricky to know what truly excellent listening looks like. Behavioral scientists have found that good listening is one of the most important things we can do to improve our relationships, develop our worldview, and potentially even change people's minds. So what can we do to become better listeners? At its core, listening in a one-on-one conversation is about taking an interest in another person and making them feel understood. There's no universally agreed upon definition of high quality listening, but some recurring features include attentiveness, conveying understanding, and showing a positive intention towards the speaker. This doesn't mean you can simply go through the motions. Researchers have found that merely smiling and nodding at set intervals doesn't quite work. However, there is something slightly performative about listening in that it's important to show you're doing it. So in addition to actively attending to a speaker's words, good listeners also use questions and body language that indicate their understanding and their desire to understand. This might feel awkward at first, and what's most effective might depend on your relationship with the speaker. But with time and practice, you can internalize these basic behaviors. So let's say a good friend wants to tell you about an issue they're having with their partner. Before even starting your conversation, remove any distractions in the environment. Turn off the TV, take off your headphones, and put your phone away. Far away. One study showed that even the visible presence of a phone made conversations feel less intimate and fulfilling to those involved. Once the conversation begins, one of the most important things you can do is also the most obvious. Try not to interrupt. This doesn't mean you need to stay completely silent, but if you do interject, look for natural pauses to ask open-ended questions that benefit the speaker, not just your curiosity. Questions like, "What happened next?" or "How did that make you feel?" Confirm that you're following the story while also helping the speaker dive deeper into their own thoughts. Another great way to show your understanding is by summarizing what you just heard and asking if you've missed anything. Summaries like these show the speaker that you're truly trying to understand them, rather than just waiting for your turn to talk. Speaking of which, while a good conversation requires back and forth, planning out your response while a speaker is talking is a common way to miss what's being said. So try to stay present. And if you lose focus, don't be shy about asking the speaker to repeat what you missed. This might feel embarrassing, but asking for clarification actually shows that you're committed to understanding. Finally, don't be afraid of silence. It's okay to ask for a moment to formulate your response, and taking a beat to think can help speakers reflect on their speech as well. These might seem like small changes, but together they make a big difference. And when people feel heard, they report more satisfaction, trust, and connection in their relationships. In the workplace, employees who feel heard generally experience less burnout and perceive the managers who listen to them more favorably. Unfortunately, while it might be easy to listen to some people, it can be hard to muster all this focus and attention if you disagree with or dislike the speaker. But these situations might actually benefit most from your efforts to listen openly.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
It's easy to tell when someone's not paying attention, but it can be surprisingly tricky to know what truly excellent listening looks like. Behavioral scientists have found that good listening is one of the most important things we can do to improve our relationships, develop our worldview, and potentially even change people's minds. So what can we do to become better listeners? At its core, listening in a one-on-one conversation is about taking an interest in another person and making them feel understood. There's no universally agreed upon definition of high quality listening, but some recurring features include attentiveness, conveying understanding, and showing a positive intention towards the speaker. This doesn't mean you can simply go through the motions. Researchers have found that merely smiling and nodding at set intervals doesn't quite work. However, there is something slightly performative about listening in that it's important to show you're doing it. So in addition to actively attending to a speaker's words, good listeners also use questions and body language that indicate their understanding and their desire to understand. This might feel awkward at first, and what's most effective might depend on your relationship with the speaker. But with time and practice, you can internalize these basic behaviors. So let's say a good friend wants to tell you about an issue they're having with their partner. Before even starting your conversation, remove any distractions in the environment. Turn off the TV, take off your headphones, and put your phone away. Far away. One study showed that even the visible presence of a phone made conversations feel less intimate and fulfilling to those involved. Once the conversation begins, one of the most important things you can do is also the most obvious. Try not to interrupt. This doesn't mean you need to stay completely silent, but if you do interject, look for natural pauses to ask open-ended questions that benefit the speaker, not just your curiosity. Questions like, what happened next? Or, how did that make you feel? Confirm that you're following the story while also helping the speaker dive deeper into their own thoughts. Another great way to show your understanding is by summarizing what you just heard and asking if you've missed anything. Summaries like these show the speaker that you're truly trying to understand them, rather than just waiting for your turn to talk. Speaking of which, while a good conversation requires back and forth, planning out your response while a speaker is talking is a common way to miss what's being said. So try to stay present. And if you lose focus, don't be shy about asking the speaker to repeat what you missed. This might feel embarrassing, but asking for clarification actually shows that you're committed to understanding. Finally, don't be afraid of silence. It's okay to ask for a moment to formulate your response, and taking a beat to think can help speakers reflect on their speech as well. These might seem like small changes, but together they make a big difference. And when people feel heard, they report more satisfaction, trust, and connection in their relationships. In the workplace, employees who feel heard generally experience less burnout and perceive the managers who listen to them more favorably. Unfortunately, while it might be easy to listen to some people, it can be hard to muster all this focus and attention if you disagree with or dislike the speaker. But these situations might actually benefit most from your efforts to listen openly.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.